For himself, weak gruel and porridge. He's basically Oliver Twist. She drives me sometimes. They go to the same school, and she won't even take him. Well, her classes start later than mine on Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's child abuse. Lies, all lies. Imogen makes him sit at intersections with a cardboard sign that says, "Abandoned child, anything helps." Then at night, she takes all the money and buys lip gloss and music. Jacob rolls his eyes. Later, they eat dinner with his parents around a claw-footed mahogany table. Windows look out on the beach, where a circle of gulls rises and collapses, and bull kelp tangles in the surf. Brett sits with one leg folded under the other, about half out of his seat, looking ready to get up and wander off in search of something. Turtle keeps looking at Brandon and Isabel Lerner, and then down at her food. Brandon is a thin, quiet man wearing a white dress shirt and slacks. At the beginning of dinner, he carefully rolls up his sleeves. Turtle puts her hair up, draws the firing pin out of her mouth, and skewers it in her ponytail. Isabel Lerner is looking critically into her glass of red wine, wearing a robe belted around her jeans and t-shirt. She has black hair streaked with gray and wears small silver earrings with blue stones. "So, Turtle," Isabel says, "how are you liking your summer?" They are eating ahi on a bed of wild rice with grilled broccolini. "It's okay," Turtle says. Isabel has a gentle, wine-drinking, leaning-back curiosity, with all the work and all the thinking done for the day. Her hands are stained black as if with gunpowder residue, but it's something else. "What is it your father does?" "What?" Turtle leans forward to hear. "Your dad, does he have a profession?" "Say that again." "Mom," Jacob says, "you're mumbling and hiding your mouth with your glass." "Ah," setting her glass down. "What does your father do, Turtle?"
He,
Turtle says. "He works as a carpenter, but he reads a lot." Isabel tilts the wine glass forward, comparing the red wine to the white of her napkin. "Look at this," she says. "Turtle, honey," she says. "Come here. You see that? The meniscus? The meniscus is... Have you done physics? Well, do you see the thinnest ring where the wine clings to the glass?" The wine is a deep dark red. Along the edge, a razor-thin oval slivers out across the glass, like the thinnest, sandy edge of a pond. And where it attenuates, the ring is tea-colored. Turtle is looking at Isabel carefully to see what she is saying. "You see how it's just sort of off-brown the way that white apple flesh turns brown when you leave it out?" "Yes," Turtle says. "That's the oxidation. It's a product of the age of the wine."
"It's rust?"
"Like rust, yes." Isabel sets the wine down, abruptly rises, and returns from the kitchen with more wine glasses, the stems slotted through her fingers. She sets them out and pours into each.
"Honey," Brandon says, "is this a good idea?"
"Yes." Isabel pushes a glass to Brett, then to Turtle, Jacob, and Imogen. Turtle lifts hers, compares it to the white tablecloth. She looks over at Isabel, and Isabel demonstrates swirling and then putting her nose to the wine. "What do you think?" she asks.
"About what?" Turtle says, smelling the wine.
"What kind of fruit?" Isabel smiles at Turtle, leans in. She has a snaggle tooth, and when she smiles, it shows.
"Ah," Jacob says, swirling his own glass.
"Big, ripe summer blackberries leaning against a white picket fence in Napa, with the vintner just come out onto his porch holding a cup of French roast." Yet, Isabel says, cutting him off. I know what you're doing, mister. Well, she can look after herself. She swings her impressive gaze to Turtle, who sits with the glass in front of her, and then to Brett. What do you think, Turtle? I love that name. Turtle? Turtle! Great! Come to you in a spirit quest or born to it? Turtle says. That's okay. Swirl that glass, honey. Turtle swirls the glass. What do you smell?
I don't know.
Orchard fruit. Apples, pears, stone fruit, blackberries, red fruit, raspberries, strawberries, cherries, leather, the forest floor, gaminess.
She doesn't like being put on the spot, Jacob says.
She's not on the spot. Blue fruit, blueberries, tart, fruit stand fresh, sitting on the counter a couple of days, or jammy, baked into a pie.
Isabel is hanging on her answer. There is no menace in her at all.
Grapes, Brett says. Fermented grapes. Black fruit, Turtle says. But fresh. Fresh blackberries. Black cherries. A little of that, like a nasturtium blossom, Turtle says.
Pepper, yes! Black fruit and spice, Isabel says, leaning back in her chair.
A little cherry wood, do you get that? As if you were to bite into a fresh cherry wood chip.
She buries her face in the wine and inhales. Expressions chase themselves subtly around her eyes and eyebrows. A dry comedienne expression. She knows exactly how funny she's being, and she's enjoying herself.
All right, Brandon says, reaching for Turtle's glass. We can take that wine away. Jacob tosses his back before Brandon can get to it.
Oh, let the girl try it, Brandon, Isabel says.
Brandon lets his hands down, looks at Isabel. Turtle has always known that other people grew up differently than she did. But she had, she thinks, no idea how differently. She lifts the glass, tastes it. It is sharper than it smells. It seems to fill her mouth. Isabel is watching her intently. Turtle wrinkles her nose. She gets the blackberry there, in the middle. Then she gets a texture off it, like Isabel said, as if she'd bitten into the edge of a cherry bookcase.
On the palate? Isabel asks.
Ugh, Turtle says. Yuck.
Well,
Isabel says, leaning back, smiling. She has time. That night, Brandon shows her to a room, which has a king-size mahogany bed with a linen duvet. He shows her into the attached bathroom and stoops over the bathtub, showing her how to work the shower and where to find the shampoo and toothpaste. Down the hall, they can hear the boys beating each other with pillows and laughing.
Jacob says you've told your dad you're here?
Brandon asks.
Yeah, Turtle says. Of course.
Good, good. They wait in silence. Brandon says,
You're quiet, aren't you?
Turtle doesn't know.
That's good, he smiles.
Turtle crinkles her eyes at him.
Jacob said that your home situation might be a little, liberal.
He says, leading her out of the attached bath. Turtle has no idea what he means.
What he said was, well, he said we shouldn't bother you about it, because you were an Ishmael upon the broad blue seas of these, your teenage years. And I just wanted to say that this bedroom is, you know, always here, just in case you need a Queequeg's coffin to keep you afloat, you know?
She may not understand Brandon's words, but she can parse his every intention just by framing his expression in her mind.
It's not like that, she says.
Oh, well, of course,
Brandon says. He's embarrassed. He pats the bed.
It's memory foam. The best, supposedly. And you're, always welcome here anyway. We all do the best we can, I guess.
Trudel lies in the bed that night, listening to the house. Downstairs, some machine cycles on, the water softener or the refrigerator. She looks at the spackled ceiling. She guesses that the boys will still be up talking, but she cannot hear them. She pulls the duvet off the bed and onto the floor. She can't stand a bed. She lies on the carpet with her head pillowed in the crook of her arm. In the morning, Imogen drives them into Mendocino and they spend the day at the beach. They go to Lipinski's and lunch on the porch, passing around a joint and drinking mocha glaciers. Days go by this way, Turtle walking back home or being driven back by Imogen, meeting them at Big River Beach or Portuguese Beach in the morning. Sometimes they catch a ride with Caroline from Mendocino to Brett's double-wide trailer on Flynn Creek Road, where the plastic sinks. The shower and the toilets are crusted with mineral grime and the water reeks of sulfur and calcium. In the living room, there is an aviary where three parrots shoulder together, watching the humans eat dinner at a formica table heaped with bills and junk mail and an old sewing machine and a single mason jar filled with buttons. Caroline keeps staring at Turtle as they eat. "Mom, quit staring," Brett says.
"I'm not staring," Caroline says.
They are eating some kind of casserole.
"I'm just happy she's here," Caroline says.
Then, leaning forward,
"So how's Martin?"
"He's all right," Turtle says.
"Any projects?"
Turtle says, "No, not really."
"He always seemed to have a project. Used to be.
Build something, research something.
What's he been up to?"
Turtle bites her lip, looks around. "Reading, mostly."
"Well, he always was a reader. You know, I'm glad you're here. I was beginning to think we'd never see you again. He never called. That night after we dropped you off, he said he would call. But I haven't heard from him," Caroline says. "And his old number is disconnected."
"Is it?" Turtle says. She knows it is.
"Yeah," Caroline says. "Did you guys change the number?"
"The phone lines," Turtle says, "run up through the orchard. Sometimes a branch messes them up. Or sometimes water gets into the line."
"Oh," Caroline says. "Has he talked to the phone company about that?"
"It's intermittent," Turtle says.
"What is he feeding you these days?"
"Mom," Brett says. "A lot of nettle tea," Turtle says. "And dandelions."
"Nettle tea," Caroline says, "is chock full of vitamins and minerals. And of course, it's also a mild abortifacient. But I suppose you're not too worried about that. Well now, is he still growing?"
"Growing?" Turtle says. "No."
"Wait," Jacob says. "A mild what?"
"Growing," she repeats.
"Is he taking care of you?" Caroline asks. "Everything is all right."
"Wait, was he growing?" Turtle asks.
"No, of course not. I was..."
"No," Caroline says.
"I just meant, where has he been? If you're going to be coming over here, I'd like to talk to him at least. There must be a way of getting a hold of him. Have you talked about what classes you're going to be taking next year?"
Turtle shakes her head. She likes the rides home in the evening with Imogen and Jacob. It is always the end of a long day and she is tired. She goes home most nights. Isabel is oblivious. She is too involved in other things. She cares very much for Turtle's opinion on things, for talking to Turtle about things, but she has not noticed or seemed to notice anything unusual in Turtle's home life, and she does not care if Turtle goes home or not. But Brandon is paying a quiet attention. Caroline, too. And also, the boys wear her out. It is good to sit over the pot with the tea roiling and to be alone with the thoughts that surface there. She likes them, but she is exhausted by their company. She's never spent so much time with other people. They feed off one another's enthusiasm. But Turtle is very worn out by them. She is not entirely sure how she feels, climbing up the steps alone, back to her darkened house, returning to solace, in some way, and to comfort, but also to regret. There is a way the house feels to her when she comes home. It is the same house, and she knows it. But it looks different than it has ever looked before. She will sit cross-legged on the hearthstones, building up the fire, eating strips of dried kelp, and listening to the silence as the firelight rises before her and drains across the empty living room floor. 16. When she hears the Forerunner coming up the drive the next day, she pulls on her jeans, threads the knife onto the belt, slips into a t-shirt and flannel. Then she folds up her blankets and sets them by the hearthstones and opens the door. It is Jacob, without Imogen this time. Standing on the porch, he looks past her, and she watches him take in the scrubbed floorboards and clean counters, the scoured fireplace, frying pans hanging on hooks along the wall in the kitchen. The living room smells of powder solvent and oil. He says, "I like the place. Spare." "It's not spare," she says. "All right," he says. "A little minimalist." "This is just how the living room is," she says. "All right," he says. "I like it." "You should." "Where's Captain Ahab?" "Out." He lifts a paper grocery bag, rolled down at the top, and says, "My parents think I'm at Brett's." "Brett is at his dad's in Modesto. I brought picnic things." "You ever have eel?" "I didn't know we had eels, but now that I know, I'm wondering why we're not eating eels right now." In the kitchen, she takes down a skillet and a stick of butter from the warm fridge. Then she walks past him out onto the porch and picks up a can of lighter fluid and a bucket. They go down the hill together, beside a deep-cut seam in the grass running with clear water, overhung with currants and thimbleberries. Frogs leap from the grass to the water. They walk through a stand of alders, and Jacob reaches up to capture an alder leaf in his fingers, and his shirt rises and shows his tawny stomach. Inside the crests of his hip bones, two alluvial hollows, the top of a trim and boyish V going down into his pants. These hollows fill her with excruciating want, a sensation of almost happening, like stepping down from one stair to the next. For a moment, she cannot look away. They duck through the barbed wire fence, cross the highway, and climb down to Buckhorn Beach, a broad crescent of black shingle and white foam, blue stone causeways diked with quartz, green waves among gardens of the large, round cobbles. Buckhorn Island sits 100 feet from the tide line, out between the two hooks of land that form the cove, and the backwash of the retreating waves funnels through the island's cave, and there meets the incoming set, booming the island like a drum, lofting slurries of white water through the blowhole, hanging foam into the island's pines, the water slapping down onto the rock. On the southern arm of the cove, there is a redwood mansion and a gardener going back and forth with a lawnmower. These would be Turtle's closest neighbors, within a 15-minute walk of her house. She's never seen them. The sky is blustery. Beyond the safety of the cove, the surf breaks white on the bare, rocky islands that litter the coast here. They set their picnic bag behind a driftwood log, and Jacob takes off his shoes and rolls up his pants and carries the bucket out to the rocks. When the waves break against the island,
The water surges into the tide pools, rises up, and retreats. The tide is not low enough for good tide pooling. Whenever they lift a stone up, the eels careen through the channels, pools, fields of seagrass. Turtle and Jacob plunging their hands into the turban snail-filled bottlenecks. When Jacob pulls his first eel out, its head pushing from between his fingers, jaw open, it slithers free of his right hand, and he catches it with the left, and it slithers from his fist and is gone, winding madly across the rock, Jacob lunging after it, and then the creature is under the next stone. He braces his shoulder to it, and Turtle helps him. They heave the stone aside, and the placid pool below is split by ripples as eels flee in every direction. Turtle lifting them by handfuls into the bucket, and Jacob trapping one in a dead end. It is an oily black monster, 20 inches long, thick as a garden hose. He lifts it out of the pool, and it squirts out of his fist, and he goes down hard on his knees, lunging, lifting it, and again losing it. The creature flashes once across the slick blue rock and is gone beneath a wine barrel-sized stone. Jacob puts a shoulder to the stone, but cannot move it. The eels are black, with kelp-brown tiger stripes and dog-like faces, jutting jaws. Turtle already has a dozen in the bucket. She and Jacob find iridescent green centipedes, horned sea lemons with lacy gills unfurled. Porcelain incrustations of spiral tube worms. They shift more cobbles. Sometimes the water beneath will be still, the snails clattering across the mother-of-pearl carpets, the hermit crabs lifting their blue-pink clutch of limbs back into their blue-pink turban shells, the sullen-looking clingfish suckered against the stone, stone-colored themselves. Other times, the tide pool erupts with the spiny backs of the eels. Jacob follows one down a channel, groping through the sea lettuce, trapping it against the wall and losing it, lifting it in one hand, losing it into a knee-deep pool full of urchins. "Okay," Turtle tells him. "You're going to get one this time." It's like the glee grave robbers must feel, cracking open caskets to see what's in them. Turtle says, "What?" "You know, lifting aside the stones is like, it's like opening a hatch that goes into the unknown. We could lift aside one of these rocks and find anything." "What?" Turtle says. "No, you stand there. I'll push them to you." "What is it like for them?" "It's not like anything for them," Turtle says. "They're eels." "They may not be technically eels. They're obviously eels." "That's true." Jacob kneels down beside one inlet, and Turtle pulls a stone aside. Beneath, the eels split in every direction, and Turtle herds them, flashing, slithering toward Jacob. They boil into his inlet, Jacob trying to block them off. And then he catches one, brings it out of the water in one hand, its head lashing. Then, with a sucking gurgle, all the water drains out of their tide pool. They both look down at it, stumped. They stand, Jacob brandishing the eel, Turtle thinking, "What just happened?" Then a bad feeling hits her and she looks up. The ocean around them is gone. It has retreated out past the island, the kelp beds and tide pools crackling and naked. Every pothole and every stand of bowling balls issues a long slurping noise as the water is pulled back into the ocean. Jacob says, "Turtle!" And then he boosts up and runs. Turtle, barefoot, goes after him, slips on a wet cobble, and falls onto hands and knees. Jacob stops, turns, and looks at her. He looks up. Then she is underwater, being poured across the rocky bottom. Her overwhelming feeling is of surprise. Every effort and thought shrinks to nothing. She is unlocked from her body and becomes vast, enormous,
and boundless, while around her kelp strands unfurl and hang upward. Rays of light break through the surface far above. The water looks motionless, uniform in blue, but in the slanting bars of sunlight, she can see grit and kelp crabs streaming past. Turtle's forward rush slows. The pressure mounts in her ears. The light dims. She is held in the slackening current. She feels it begin to change as water drains from the flooded cove back out to sea. The undertow peels sand from the bottom in long, undulate ribbons. Turtle thinks, "Swim, you bitch." Then she is dragged backward, helpless, raked along the rocky floor, bowling balls lurching up from their sockets and bounding after her. The roar is so grindingly vast that every individual sound is lost. She climbs desperately toward the surface, breaks among creamy heaps of white water, and takes a lungful of air. The black wall of Buckhorn Island is hard beside her, terrifyingly close, shining blue muscles knurled to the rock like so many porcelain razors. Brush that wall, she knows, and she may not make it. She cannot see Jacob anywhere, but ahead of her, the beach is flooded, the driftwood thundering against the cliffs. No way he escaped. He is here somewhere, only she cannot see him. The water is still draining backward, even as more waves are pushing onto shore, so the entire cove is filled with muddled, complicated currents. It tosses and heaves like water carried in a bucket. She dives. The cobbled bottom is right there. They are in 10, 15 feet of water. She can see Jacob against the surface. He is drifting, limp, blood falling from him in streamers. She grabs him by the hair and hauls him up. "Breathe," she yells. "Breathe!" He takes a breath and immediately pukes. She holds on to him. Buckhorn Island is close beside them. They are being dragged toward it. A tremendous amount of water has washed up into the cove, and all of it is now pouring back out to sea, funneling past the island, through the narrow, rocky channels that usually protect the cove. She and Jacob have to reach the beach. If they are pulled out with the tide, they will find themselves in the unsheltered sculpture garden of twisted black rocks that litter the coast here. Above them, on that well-groomed hook with its redwood mansion, the gardener is still going back and forth with the lawnmower. "Jacob, can you swim?" He nods. She dives and he follows. Together they kick hard across the blue cobbled bottom, great whips of seaweed winging past. They make no headway against the current. She breaks the surface, choking. Then a backwashing wave crashes over them, and Jacob is sucked, screaming, into the island's gorging stone tunnel. She delves under the surface and follows him into the cave beneath the island. They breach together. The chop throws water over their faces. Turtle gasps. She sucks air. They lull up and down, the lapping water and their breathing echoing, and Turtle looks up. They are in the tide-hollowed chamber inside the island. She can see the bright demicircles of the entrances to either side, blocked by intermittent swells. One side looks toward the beach. The other fronts open ocean. Water eddies off the walls and drips, echoing from the vaulted ceiling. It is waist-deep, the color of old glass. The mouth of the blowhole is open above them, and garlands of nasturtiums hang through it, the flowers a burnt red. The floor is carpeted with brown feathers of kelp, and huge orange starfish cling everywhere to the rock. The kelp fronds plume forward and back with the opposing currents. "Shit," Jacob says, and she turns. A wall of water is sweeping in through the cave's mouth. "No," she says. She turns and looks behind them. A second wall of water is rising through the opposite entrance, and the two walls are converging. One is the wave coming in off the ocean, and the other is the backwash draining from the beach. "No, no, no," she says. Her thoughts are green and yellow with terror. She thinks, "We are going to die," her diaphragm hitching with sobs. He grabs her by the waist. She puts her chin on his shoulder. She thinks, "We are going to die. We are going to die right now." The water swells around them, lifts to their chests. And then the wave hits her, and she goes slip-sliding through the kelp and is miraculously swung up into the air among lofted chandeliers of water and great hanging tresses of blooming nasturtium. Her brain and her guts hurt with terror. She puts her hand out to brace against the impact, and she is clapped against the wall. Her fingers break, her arms fold, and she is keel-hauled across 30 feet of rock, rolling side over side, covering her face and forearms and going hard into the stone with the rupturing bursts of shattering muscle shells. Something is talking to her. Someone right behind her is whispering into her ear, "You are not going to die. Hold on. You are not going to die." And Turtle herself thinks, "You bitch. You slit. You just hold on. Do not let go. Never let go." Then they are out of the cave. Turtle is swimming hard. The water tosses above her head and the chop breaks around her. The beach, the cove, and Buckhorn Island are behind her. Around them, the sea is worked into green mounds that funnel and break on crooked black rocks. Kelp fronds rise out of the indecipherable green, broader than her hands, painted in lustrous brush strokes, dark and golden brown. She and Jacob have been drawn into the maze of small islands and black rock that lie just off the coast. She fights hand over hand through the water. There is no pain, no sense of effort. She catches a glimpse of sand, shingle, blue walls of rock. It is an island. Some nameless piece of rock, 100 yards from the bluffs, with a small, sandy notch cut into the western face. She fights through the surf, and a swell drags her up onto the rough blue stones of the sea stack's small beach. She pitches forward and claws out of the draining water, then turns and wades back in to help Jacob up. 17. Together, they slosh up the beach to the stone foot of the island and clamber desperately away from the water, a climb of 20 or 25 feet, the damp blue rock shearing away beneath them, the cracks grouted with swarms of quivering roaches. She mounts into a swash of spongy, tightly grown weeds and lies puking. The top of the island is 30 feet of scrubby grass filled with the small, bleached bones of birds. She crawls on her elbows to the edge and looks out. The island is of a height with the bluffs. Between here and there, 300 feet of black rocks awash in the surf, and the shadow of rocks sprawled beneath the blue-green water. Between the sets, it looks almost as if they could swim to shore. But when the waves break into those channels, it is something else. She lies in the grass thinking, "We're fucked." Then she thinks, "We're not fucked. If anybody knows how to handle this, it's you. Where are your guts?" Jacob is lying beside her, face down, hands clenched together beneath his chest, shivering and vomiting. He has a concussion. She is sure of it. She has had a few herself and knows the feeling. He is bleeding copiously into his hair. There is blood on his face and in the grass all around him. It's the outsized bleeding she associates with scalp wounds. He's going to be fine. She cannot say the same for herself.
Can we swim there?
She looks at him. She does not know if she can even stand.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
There is a single cloud high above, attenuated into white threads. She peels her hands from her bloody folds of her shirt and looks at them. Her nails are cracked away from their pulpy beds. Her right hand is cut deeply across the palm. She's broken the smallest three fingers of her left hand, all but the index. She puts her hands in her armpits and lies with them held securely against her. It hurts to breathe.
What do we do, Turtle?
Sand is stuck to half his face, his teeth rimmed with blood. He has vomited all over himself.
Turtle?
Yeah?
Are we okay?
Her mouth is full of sand. She says,
We've got a traction in my fucking motherfucking goddamn fingers.
He begins vomiting again. She lies in the grass and watches the single cloud turn and shift. At last he says,
That sounds like something better left to a doctor.
She doesn't say anything to this. The wind blows across the island's top. He's trying out his objections in his mind. She can see him doing it. He shivers in tight bursts.
Okay,
he says at last.
Okay?
Okay. We need sticks to splint them, she says. Wide cotton ties, an inch wide, 8 to 12 inches long. Jacob staggers to his feet. Turtle lies holding very still and grimacing. Jacob paces around the island. He is unsteady on his feet. At last, he says,
Not a lot of sticks here.
She can hear him trying several of the small bones scattered in the grass, but they are bleached and fragile. At last, he says,
How about a pen? I've got one in my pocket.
Still?
Well, I started with three.
Get my knife. He comes over to her. She lies very still. He unsnaps the clasp and drags the knife from the wet sheath. He cuts the pen in two. He says,
That was my lucky pen. I wrote a very good essay on Angela Carter with that pen.
Now we're going to need several cotton ties. She eases herself up and they cut ties from her wet flannel. She carefully extracts her broken hand from her armpit and holds it out.
Jesus Christ, Jacob says.
The bones make angular protrusions in the skin. Her ring finger is visibly dislocated from its socket.
How are you not freaking out?
What?
Aren't you, like, flipping out?
Jacob,
you need a doctor.
Pull steadily and firmly in line with the finger.
Oh, God.
Don't go easy. Pull firmly on that bitch. Taking hold of her broken pinky finger, he says,
Oh, God, it's bad. Oh, God, it's real bad. It feels real, real bad.
Turtle looks up at the sky. Her body flushes with anticipation, and she can feel her hair prickling and standing up.
Now?
Yes, now.
Okay,
he says.
Wait,
she says. He looks at her. She takes a deep breath. She is quivering with fear. Don't limp wrist it, Jacob, she says.
I don't know what that means.
Just do it right the first time.
I'm gonna try.
She blows air through her pursed lips, shuddering and shaking.
Okay, now.
Jacob pulls traction and the finger straightens with the audible grinding of bones. Turtle hisses through gritted teeth. Jacob shrieks as the finger straightens.
Motherfucker,
she says. She gasps, sweating.
Motherfucker,
she says again, looking at him almost with needfulness. Jacob places the trimmed pen half against the straightened finger and wraps it carefully with a wide flannel band and ties it off.
You're lucky you didn't die. I know it. I'm serious, Turtle. She looks at him flatly, trying to see how she could be anything else but serious. The way you got dragged across those rocks. I know. I can't believe you're alive. She says nothing. You might be kind of a tough person. Afterward, Turtle lies in the grass getting her mind back. With the pain from splinting the fingers, it felt like the thinking part of her had gone away and she needs it back. Jacob says, So I've been looking down into that little beach below us. I think it's mostly safe. I think we could go down there. The waves aren't really coming up very far. There are driftwood logs down there and fishing floats with little bits of nylon rope and seaweed, and there are a few plastic bottles. I think we can make a raft. The tide's still coming in, she says. We better wait then. She closes her eyes with pain. I'm kind of leery. He's eyeing the stretch of water. If we do make a raft, we'll have a tough decision. Turtle says, I was thinking that. If we head straight toward the bluffs, right there ahead of us, we won't be able to beach the raft at high tide because the beach is flooded and will be broken on the cliffs. But at low tide, we can't get across the rocks. So we'll have to try and make it back into Buckhorn Cove, past the island. Jacob pauses. Sure, there's that. But also, like, are you Jim and I'm Huck? Are you like Huck and I'm Jim? Those parallels are just kind of tangly and might be hard to sort out. Because, like, in a certain way, I'm the captive of a delimiting and coercive capitalist mindset. But also you might be like a literal and actual captive. So it's hard to say. We're going to have to talk that one out. What? Well, I'm just saying that... Never mind. What are you talking about? Nothing. I was being childish and naive. This is why I don't have Twitter. What? I'm gonna shut up now. When the tide goes out that afternoon, they pick their way down to the beach, and Turtle sits on a log looking west. The beach is coarse sand fretted with cobble, set back into a little notch in the island's western cliff face, and enclosed on three sides by leaning, blue sandstone walls 20 feet high. The beach is only 10 or so feet wide. It ramps steeply out of the water. In each retreating wave, the beach cobbles lurch from their beds and roll over one another with a sound like the world grinding its teeth. The wind cuts crosswise to the mouth of the notch and eddies against the rock walls. In gusts, these eddies reel foam up into the air and churn it into spindly twisters that go staggering across the tide line. Set into the gray wax sandstone wall that forms the back of the notch, there is a triangular crack, the mouth of a cave. It must go entirely through the island, because sometimes it burbles startling washes of seawater. Jacob kicks through the piled driftwood, calling out his finds to Turtle. A spray can, then, Turtle, a 2-liter Coke bottle. He comes over and sits beside her. He is shivering. His teeth chatter. For all the sun, they can't shake off the cold, which seems to have gotten in their bones. They're both still wet. What can we do? I don't know. What can we make with this? I don't know, she says. Well, what do we need to do next? We need to make a fire. Okay, why? Well, we're not getting home tonight. Not unless someone comes to get us, and no one's coming for us, I don't think. And if we're going to make it through the night, we need a fire. You don't think we'll make it through the night? Not comfortably. We need water, Jacob. And with a fire, we can make fresh water. Plus, as exposed as we are going to get cold. Not cold enough to die, but cold enough to be miserable. Can't we make fire by rubbing two sticks together? Everything's wet. We could use the knife and strike sparks from these rocks. We could maybe start a fire with a bow drill. What are the chances it would work? Lo, she says, let's try. We need to think. We need to be sure. Before we do anything, we need to be sure. I'm excited about this. She is silent. We've got to try something. And since your plotting literalness will not allow us to strike sparks from your flinty heartstrings, we should try a real and actual solution. Okay? Great. I'm not plottingly literal. I know. Turtle sits in a crescent of sunlight on the beach, her hands clamped in her armpits, and explains what they need to make a bow drill while Jacob brings driftwood for her examination. We'll need a pliant rod for the bow itself, and we'll string it with a strap from your shirt. Then wood of matching hardness for a spindle and fireboard. Then a handboard. The handboard matters less. She coaches him on the clove hitches for tying off the bow, saying, looser, looser yet. There. The bowstring will roll a loop around the spindle, and you rotate the spindle by sawing the bow forward and back. Okay. So the bow should be bent well shy of breaking. Here? There. Now tie it off with another clove hitch. Some tine of bone shifts in her ring finger, and she sucks her teeth, sweating. You okay? We need a spindle. Something dry. She watches him sorting through the driftwood. I can't tell if they're dry, he says, looking at his own hands, too scraped up and too sandy to feel the damp. Test them against your face. He tests a wood scrap against his face, looks at her blankly. He doesn't know. You're useless, she says, raising her chin. He holds it against her cheek, saying, I am not useless. She closes her eyes with attention. Too wet, but everything's wet. How about this? He says, picking up another. It's redwood. And? You want a fine, tight grain. Lay dents in it with your fingernails. There. See how soft that motherfucker is? Useless. Okay, this is good. Keep talking. She nods to a piece she's picked out. The spindle is held between the fireboard and the handboard. The top end of the spindle is a sharp point that turns freely against the handboard, like the point of a top. And the bottom end should be a round joint that fits the fireboard socket as tightly as possible. That rounded point of the spindle, which pivots forward and back in the fireboard socket as you saw the bow, is what makes the coals. He picks up the spindle and begins to work at it. Slivers, she tells him. More like paring fingernails than carpentry. Jacob wipes blood from his eyes. There, like that. This is awesome, he says. Shut up and focus. She watches him whittle the spindle and auger a hole into the fireboard with the point of the knife. He lays the remains of his t-shirt and her flannel across the driftwood log and, rasping the knife blade across the fabric, brings up trundles of lint for tinder. He pries his splinters from the logs for kindling and props them up to dry. By the time he is done, it is getting late in the afternoon, the lights slanting into their little notch of beach, jellyfish and kelp suspended in the clear blue waves and silhouetted against the horizon. The tide has continued to rise. A single wave swishes past the rest and climbs, crackling, up the beach to her feet. Turtle's guts squeeze, even as she watches it dissolve into the sand. The tide, the tide. They climb back to the island's top and huddle together in the scrubby grass. The top of the island is exposed,
and the wind cuts right through their damp clothes. It is 6 p.m., she would guess, or thereabouts, and the tide will likely peak just after sunset, around 9 or 10. They are both shivering. It is going to be a very high tide. The biggest waves make Turtle very nervous, Jacob says. Should we try to start the fire now? Not in this wind. I think we need to make a raft. Maybe, she says. The sun melts into the horizon, the moon cresting up in the southeast, waxing gibbous, a day or two shy of full, sitting nearly opposite the sun in the sky. It is cold. The wind gutters at sundown, and then it picks up. Jacob falls into a fitful sleep, gasping and shaking, and Turtle clings to him for warmth, breathing the hot, wet air he exhales, her hands aching, but she cannot sleep. The wind sucks all the warmth out of her, and she lies in silent, bitter endurance of each moment with her hand sometimes cupped over her ear. The ache seeping nauseously down into her very cochlea, into her jawbones. She cannot sleep, but her mind descends to fevered imaginings that do not deliver her from the torment of the cold. Clamped tight and fetally about herself, her back throbbing and the cold seeping through her, she feels stripped of everything, bereft. She crawls through the grass and looks down at the beach. The dark water's rise has swallowed the sand. The driftwood logs rolling pin against the cliffs. She can catch the spray where the waves break against the island. She lies cursing to herself. Her back, deeply cut where the waves broke her against the mussel beds, is throbbing and engorged. The feeling is familiar to her. The distinctive swelling of a wound not getting better, but worse. The cuts must be dirty, packed with bits of cotton, mussel shells, something. She needs to get out of the cold, out of the wind, into some clean, warm, firelit room. She crawls back to Jacob and, drawing against him, soaks up what warmth she can. Hours pass like this. Finally, when Turtle hears the sound of the waves change from the booming, breaking crash against the bluffs to the swish and grind, she wakes him. Jacob?
What?
He says. We have to get out of the wind.
Turtle, he says. What if another wave?
I can't, she says, her teeth chattering. She leads him, Jacob holding her elbow as they pick their way with numb, bloody feet down to the beach. The tide is terrifyingly high. The sand is wet.
Jacob, she says, I'm fucking cold.
It's the wind, he says. I could stand it if it weren't for the wind and the spray.
We need to make a fire.
He is silent for a long time. Turtle is on her haunches with her arms wrapped around herself. She can read his face as he tries and discards his own questions.
Okay, he says. Tell me what to do.
She shows Jacob how to hold the fireboard in place with his toe, how to hold the spindle between the fireboard and the handboard, pressing carefully and steadily with the handboard, how to saw the spindle with the bow so that it turns forward and back. Forward and back. Then she sits up with him, coaching him. Slower, patient, steady. Don't speed up and don't slow down. Just go even strokes. Forward and back, like that. He breathes rhythmically with the drawing of the bow, forward and back, and she warns him. Steady, steady. With a misstroke, he jumps the spindle from the socket.
God damn it, she says, shivering.
Listen, Jacob. Slowly, carefully,
You have to do this right.
Coolly, he reassembles the drill and begins to work.
Turtle says, "Don't think about it. If you think about it, you kill it. Pay attention, but don't think about it. Put your brain in your lunchbox and just go to work. There's a part of you that knows how to do this, and you have to let that part do it."
She lies in the wet sand, suffering with cold, but sheltered now from the wind. She can feel her heartbeat in her swollen back and in her broken fingers, which are cemented into her armpit with blood and salt. She opens her mouth, and her lips come apart with a cracking noise. Her tongue wallows audibly in her mouth. Her eyes are gummy, and she blinks with difficulty to clear her vision. Her face is numb. The moon is still in the southeast, hidden by the island. She tells herself, "It may hurt, but you're a long way from dead yet, girl. When you stop shivering, then you'll know. But you've still got it yet."
The clouds above her are lit eerie and silver, and she can make out their smoky, wispy texture. Where the waves lap up, she can see the silver on their faces. The beach itself, black and lightness in the shadow of the island.
Jacob is bent intently over the bow.
"Jacob," she says.
He says nothing.
"Jacob, I need you to do this."
"I'll try."
"Don't fuck this up."
The cold and her own uselessness are on her like a panic. If she had the use of her hands, she could do it.
"God," she thinks, shivering. "Why do you have to start to lose it now, Turtle?"
He wavers again and she hisses,
"God fucking damn it! Concentrate! Pay attention, you spoiled, useless, spineless—"
She watches with wretched urgency.
"I'm sorry," he says. "Fuck, fuck, fuck," she says. Her voice is hoarse, bitter.
"Jacob, you have to carry some weight here."
"I'm sorry."
"Oh," she says, "you're sorry? Fuck, Jacob. Fuck." She could die. She could die here on this island, broken, dehydrated, sapped by the wind, and finally, awfully finished by the cold and the wet. She could die because of his incompetence. She needs him to understand that. And at the same time, she does not want to scare him. And so, seething, she watches him, her throat throttled with rage.
"You pathetic piece of shit," she says, racked by shivering.
The words are disgorging from some deep pit inside of her.
"I think it's too wet," he says.
"You useless, useless little bitch," she says.
"I'm sorry."
"Sorry? You're sorry? You have to be a hell of a lot more than sorry."
Turtle thinks, "He doesn't know how to do this and he needs you. If you cannot see that, you are useless to him and to yourself. If you cannot tell him, cannot explain it to him."
She lies shivering in the sand.
"Listen," she says. "Jacob, you have to do this. No choice, Jacob."
"I'm trying," he says.
"I'm trying," she bleats back at him.
"What am I doing?" she thinks nightmarishly.
"Do you suck this badly at your entire life, or is it only the important things?"
"I think, like you said, it may be too wet."
She thinks, "He's right. Of course he's right." She thinks, "You need to coach him." She says, "Your tools aren't the problem. Being a useless piece of shit, that's the problem."
"Turtle, I gotta tell you, it doesn't look like it's going to work. It's not just that the wet keeps it from making coals. It's like, because the wood is wet, it crumbles before you can get enough friction."
"It sounds," she says,
Like, you're going to have to stop fucking it up. She thinks, what is wrong with you?